welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And welcome back to Inspired Island. I have been really looking forward to this conversation. We have a great guest in the studio today. Seth Zuckerman is co-author of a brand new book called A Forest of Your Own, The Pacific Northwest Handbook of Ecological Forestry. And it's a stunning book full of photos and diagrams and maps that really make the issues in it around forests really approachable and memorable. So I'm excited to dive into that with Seth. And Seth is also the executive director of the Northwest Natural Resource Group, a 501c3 nonprofit that strengthens the ecological and economic vitality of the Northwest forests and communities by connecting people with the knowledge, skills, and markets they need to steward their land. As you'll soon learn, Seth brings a wealth of knowledge about all things forests. And of course, this is an issue very near and dear to many of us living in the lush Pacific Northwest, and specifically here on Vashon Mori Island, where we have the good fortune to be surrounded by so many forests, both privately and publicly held. So thanks for coming on today, Seth.
Thanks a lot for having me, Grace.
Now, I'd love to dive straight into this book that I have it sitting in front of me right here. Could you tell us a little bit in your own words about A Forest of Your Own?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to say that A Forest of Your Own doesn't mean you actually have to have title to a piece of land. All of us here in the Northwest, there's a place of forest that is near and dear to us. It might be a county forest. It might be a land trust that owns land nearby that you walk through. Or even our larger public forests that are owned by the state or held by the federal government. Mm-hmm. The overall idea of the book was actually hearkening back to an organic gardening book that some people might know, How to Grow More Vegetables. And I woke up one day in the midst of the pandemic and thought, there ought to be a book that does for forests and forest ownership and stewardship what How to Grow More Vegetables did for organic gardening. So something that both inspires people to want to do it and also gives them some pointers so they can get started.
I love that. And so it's really a handbook for people who have their own forests or really hands-on in forests or also just are interested in forests.
Yeah, the forest enthusiasts, we think of them as, people who care about a forest who might be interested in how, say, Island Center Forest is managed.
Yeah, awesome. And could you give us a flavor for some of the specific skills or like takeaways that people can expect to get from the book?
Well, I'd say the biggest message is that both the mow-it-all-down industrial forest school of thought and the lock-it-all-up-and-walk-away school of thought are not adequate to the challenges that Northwest forests face. And so we have to learn how to be active, compassionate stewards of the land and thinking about the forest as a whole system in order to be able to pass on the forest to the next generation.
Awesome. And could you just chat a little bit about, the book covers many of them, but what are some of the biggest challenges facing forests, particularly here in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, I'd say the biggest challenges are those two attitudes that we're trying to steer between. I can see how people might have come to, and I hear this from people all the time, this idea that people have screwed up the forest. We're not good at being managers of the forest. And instead, I think, though, we have to think about how can we as humans, as the Northwest, as a society in the Northwest, put the forest back right after the damage that has been done to them and the whole forest system, watersheds, species, habitat, carbon storage that's happened over the past century and a half. I'd say, external challenges, there's things like climate change, increased susceptibility to wildfire. Those are sort of the bigger challenges as well.
And you touched on it, but could you describe a little bit about the genesis of the book and specifically who your co-author is?
So I have the good fortune to be working as part of a really great team at Northwest Natural Resource Group. We help people think about the forest and manage their forests. and understand what's going on in the forest here, particularly in Western Washington and Oregon. And so I've worked with my co-author, Kirk Hansen, who's the director of forestry there, who's been there for nearly 20 years. Mm-hmm. And he himself is a forest steward with three different parcels of land in his family that total over a couple hundred acres. And he's, over the years, worked with hundreds of people on forest management plans, helped them understand how to manage their land in such a wide variety of situations.
Mm.
So he brings a lot of hands-on experience to the project. Whereas I have maybe more of the, you know, climate change policy, philosophy kind of picture to it.
Love that. And something I really appreciated is that each chapter marks which one of you was at least the lead author of it. So I thought that was pretty cool. Did you learn anything from either your research for the book or Kirk's side of things that maybe surprised you or really stood out?
Well, you know, I've been learning from Kirk for ever since I started working with him in 2017. Mm-hmm. He's really a great forest steward himself. In terms of the research that I did in the book, one of the chapters that I worked on was the wildfire chapter.
Oh, yeah.
And I moved here from California a couple decades ago, and I realized that I had brought some attitudes about wildfire with me to the Northwest that didn't actually prove out here in this area, in this climate. Wildfire scientists talk about something called a fire regime, which is the way fire tends to interact or behave in a particular landscape. And there's areas that are like, say, Northern California or Southern Oregon are part of a high-frequency, low-intensity fire regime. So in the course of natural events, they would tend to burn pretty often. But if the forest is well-managed, the fire would just kind of run through without doing too much damage to the forest stand. But up here, because it's so wet most of the time, because there's so much biomass in the forest, we tend to be part of a high-intensity, low-frequency fire regime, kind of the opposite. So it's rare for a damaging fire to get started, but when it does and when conditions are right or wrong, of course, if you think of it that way from the standpoint of the human beings living around it, then the fire will be very intense and will naturally tend to take out the bulk of the living trees and initiate a whole new stand of trees that would sprout in the aftermath of that.
Yeah, and could you talk a little bit about thinning, because I know that's can be a controversial topic, and I thought the book was really laid it out in a really interesting way, and it seemed to be a big theme, I guess, in terms of the managing a forest well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the way I think about thinning is, you know, right after, say, in our part of the world, if after a fire, or for that matter, after a clear cut or a windstorm, when there's all this light coming down to the forest floor, then all kinds of seedlings will respond and will sprout up. And, you know, you'll see hundreds of trees per acre. Now, compare that to if you walk through an older forest stand. There might be 25, 50, 100 trees to the acre at most. So over the course of decades, those trees would naturally thin themselves out. And forest thinning is a way of both accelerating that process, helping to develop more structure in the forest, while at the same time harvesting some of the gifts that the forest can offer us without diminishing all the other things that it's doing besides providing us with 2x4s.
Mm, very interesting. It wasn't until I was an adult that I really started to appreciate, and this book is helping me appreciate it even more, the differences between a young forest and a mature forest. And a tree is not just a tree. You know, different trees bring different value to the ecosystem and just the importance of some of those old growth forests.
Right. And so just to pick up a little bit more on this idea of thinning, you can think of thinning as a way of making room for larger trees. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. If we want the trees to be able to grow larger, we have to create the room for that to happen. Now, there's so many forests right now that are in a fairly vulnerable stage between maybe 30 and 60 or 70 years old, where if they get too dense, they're quite vulnerable to wind throw, meaning a windstorm coming through and knocking a bunch of them over, insects, drought, that sort of thing. And because we have reduced over the, you know, through forest management and timber exploitation, we've reduced the number of older forests. We have to conserve and take good care of those middle-aged forests because it's only middle-aged forests that are in a position to grow into older forests.
Mm.
So,
yeah. And on that note, would you give Washington State here, like what grade would you give us in terms of how overall as a state we're managing our forests with those considerations in mind?
Well, I think you have to divide up Washington. You can't think of Washington State as a whole, right? There's all these different demographic segments or forest segments, right? There's the national forest, the state trust lands, not private industrial forests and private non-industrial forests and finally tribal forests. And, you know, I don't know how much detail you'd want me to get into here, but some of those are doing better than others. Certainly the industrial forests are doing the worst because they're dominated by a paradigm that requires the investors and the, therefore the managers to maximize the return on investment.
Okay.
Which results in them cutting the trees at age 35 or 40, well before they've started to reach their maximum productivity. And certainly before they've begun to pay the sort of biodiversity dividends or carbon storage dividends that a forest can pay at an older age.
Very cool. Well, not cool, but very interesting. And bringing it home here to Vashon, what do you think about the state of forests here? For example, Center Island Forest, what would you, how would you describe that forest to people?
Well, I think Island Center Forest is a great example because it was part of the state trust lands and it was managed to, for until the mid-aughts, I think. It was managed as part of that portfolio of lands that were required to return an economic or financial return to the trust beneficiaries, the schools or the or whatever. And then that mission was changed as King County became involved and took over the management of the land. And so you see a patchwork of land use histories within Island Center Forest. You know, there's some areas like the Valley of the Firs where the trees have been allowed to get quite large. They probably had, were it still managed as part of the trust lands, would probably already have been clear cut or cut with just a few remaining trees. And so now actually there's a project that King County plans to thin that to variable densities and to create more forest structure that will help approximate the trajectory of that forest that would it would have followed as it evolved and succeeded from a middle-aged to an older forest stand, providing more different kinds of habitat. It's, and then there's also a lot of younger stands that are the product of more recent cutting.
Wow, that's awesome. And the book actually had a great section about trails. And even if you're not don't own your own forest and aren't going to be building your own trails, there's a lot of information and diagrams in here to help you better appreciate how trails are built in a responsible way. So Seth, obviously you are just full of knowledge about forests and all that they contain, which as this book helps you appreciate, forests are so much more than just a patch of trees. Could you tell us a little bit about your personal background? You know, where you grew up? I know you said you moved from California. Are you from California originally?
Yes, I was born in California. My bio on the website says that I've been moving northward in search of steadier precipitation. I think I've gotten about as far as I need to go. Tofino might offer a little bit more, but I'm content with where I am, where I sit here on Vashon. First moved to Vashon in 2002.
Okay.
And stayed a year and then moved to Seattle. And then the winds of change blew us back to Northern California, to the Humboldt County area. Where I'd been living before I came to Vashon for the first time, and then briefly to the East Coast, and then finally back to Vashon.
Okay, we're on the East Coast.
Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay, nice. I'm from Central Massachusetts originally. And where did this passion for forests or the environment come from?
Well, I don't know. I think the passion for the environment has just come from me spending time in the outdoors, going back to when there was a vacant lot next to the house where I grew up in Southern California. Passion for forests specifically, I'd say, began actually when I was working as a journalist. And I was living in California, and in the aftermath of a really severe wildfire season, I went to the Sierra, and I pitched a story to the Sunday magazine of the San Francisco Chronicle and Examiner and said, you know, we should really understand why these fires happened, why they were so bad. And so I spent a week talking to forest scientists and forest service and industrial forest managers, forestry professors in the Sierra Nevada and the Klamath Mountains, and came back with what was then kind of surprising idea that the way we'd been suppressing fire in that area had actually made the fires worse once the fires actually escaped our suppression efforts. And that helped me realize that my education had focused on, in undergrad, I'd learned about energy and energy resources and so on, but I hadn't really learned about the living world. Mm. And so that motivated me to go back to grad school to learn more about forests in particular and focus on them as kind of an interdisciplinary example of how we interact with the rest of the natural world and how that also has influences on economics, politics, and conversely how politics and economics influence our care of the forests.
Mm, wow. And I see a nice synergy with the background in journalism and probably a lot of writing and storytelling and this book. So it must have been a nice way for those skills and worlds to collide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Very cool. And what was your career path leading up to where you are now at Northwest Natural Resource Group? Like what after you graduated from grad school?
So I took all those tools and actually went back to being a working journalist for quite a few years. And in the late 90s, I had a kind of a dream job with an organization called EcoTrust that's based in Portland, Oregon, where they hired me to be their circuit rider and to travel up and down the West Coast from Santa Cruz, California to Cordova, Alaska, and see what sort of innovations were being tried as the traditional timber and fishing economies were foundering on a scarcity of resources and the old growth having been cut and the salmon runs being depleted. And they wanted me to write about it and also to connect people who were doing similar things in different places. So that was an amazing opportunity. And I met some unforgettable people along the way, on Haida Gwaii, for example, or a guy who had converted part of his land in Brooklyn, Washington, which is out in the Willapa Bay watershed, to a set of artificial spawning channels for salmon. The things that people will do, right? So it led me to that sort of journalism work with them, and also to my previous book, which was Salmon Nation. People and Fish, People, Fish, and Our Common Home, which was published by EcoTrust around the turn of the millennium.
Okay.
I was the co-editor and co-author of that book. And then after that, when I moved to California, I was running a forestry program at a local watershed restoration council. The watershed is the Mattol Restoration Council, and the program was called the Wild and Working Lands Program. So recognizing that there are lands in this watershed, which is, 300 square miles and mostly privately owned, some of them are going to be wildlands and some are going to be working lands, but we have to figure out how all of them can coexist in that watershed without degrading our common heritage of fish, clean water, and so on.
Wow. And so where did Vashon come into the picture?
My wife and I have different ideas about cities.
Okay.
And the right place on the continuum of city to country living. And I tend to be more of a country person and she's more of an urban person. And when we moved here together to the Puget Sound area in 2002, Vashon Island was this really unique place where you could straddle both those worlds.
Mm.
You could live in a very rural place, but still be very close to the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 22-minute water taxi ride. And I'd say that the water taxi is just one of the ongoing miracles of our life here on the island. So that's how we wound up on Vashon. We actually looked at two other islands, Whidbey and Bainbridge, and ruled them each out for different reasons. But Vashon was just right.
Fit the bill. And do you commute most days?
I commuted, well, before the pandemic, I commuted into the city 4 days a week on the water taxi. Now it's 1 day a week.
Okay. And could you tell us a little bit more about the Northwest Natural Resource Group and what you see as the best parts about being executive director and what are the biggest challenges?
Hmm. Well, I'd been for most of my professional life, I was a freelancer. And so it was just me.
Mm.
And whatever I could do was all I could accomplish was the things that I could stay up late doing, right? the great thing about being part of this team at mm-hmm. Northwest Natural Resource Group, and there's now 11 of us, is that we can collaborate and we have mutually reinforcing strengths in either providing education to people and outreach about why ecological forestry is important. We're with a lot of land trusts, counties and cities, one Indian tribe, as well as just family forest owners.
And is a lot of the work hands-on in these patches of land?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we'll help people articulate their objectives for their land and then translate those into a management plan or a stewardship plan for their forest. And then we can help them put it into practice, either by putting that, overseeing the, say, a timber harvest, if that's what's needed, or a pre-commercial thinning when the trees are still young but too crowded and they need a little bit of elbow room, or maybe there's an area that needs to that they'd like to replant, and they'd like, say, to replace the salmonberry and the blackberry or the scotch broom with native trees, and we can help them accomplish that as well.
So the sky's the limit, seems like. And the book covers a lot of different sort of tangible, practical ways, but thinking about people who don't own their own forests, are there any tips or sort of calls to action that the Northwest Natural Resource Group likes to share in terms of how everybody can help support ecological forestry?
Well, I think that, if someone were to read the book, or even just skim through it, I don't think that they would look at forests, at their local public forest, the same way again. They would mm-hmm. see processes at work in the forest that previously they'd just been part of the wallpaper. So I think that's the first thing, is to just become aware and pay attention. And the forest is a great teacher.
Yeah, definitely. And while we have you here, one of the common themes that comes up a lot is orcas and salmon. We've had spoken to a lot of experts that live here on Vashon. Could you talk a little bit about the role that forests play? You touched a little bit on it.
Oh, absolutely. So, Vashon is a heap of sand and gravel that was left behind by the glacier.
Mm.
And if you just imagine, making a heap of sand and gravel in your backyard and then spraying it with water, it would kind of melt away. But by virtue of the fact that it's covered with thick forests, our land is much more protected from erosion than it would be if it were bare.
I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, definitely.
So, the path that a water drop might follow, and we talk about this in the book, that it might follow if it lands in a forest is so different. It might just evaporate off the boughs of the trees, and that gives you that sort of lovely mist effect that comes off when it's sunny and mist seems to be rising off the forest. It might trickle down the trunk of the tree, and it percolates into the groundwater so much better that way. because it arrives more slowly instead of these in these intense pulses. The forest creates a thick layer of duff, which is like a sponge, to absorb that incoming water. And then it recharges our aquifers, and that's what we drink from here on the island.
Yes, definitely. And so the book right now, it's brand new, hot off the presses at the moment. So are you doing a lot of speaking engagements and sort of a book tour of any sort?
Well, yes, Mountaineers, the publisher, has been really great at setting up opportunities for us to do that. We just came back from an appearance at Powell's last week.
Cool.
I'm headed to the Dungeness Nature Center tomorrow, up to Bellingham next week, and then to Ashland and Arcata. They've even gotten us on daytime TV here in Seattle on Fox 13 and King 5.
Yes, I saw those segments. They're really great. If people want to check them out, I'll have the website where you can do that in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Seth. Well, we love to end every show with a fun lightning round of questions just to get to know you a little better. Are you game?
Always.
Okay, awesome. The first one is, do you have a favorite beverage on Vashon?
I'd say grabbing a cortado at Cafe Vino e Olio.
Ooh, good one. If you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island? Do you have any favorite haunts?
Well, I'm going to name a rather obscure forest walk.
Ooh, okay.
Which can be found at the end of 184th on the east side of the island. It's a piece of land that was purchased by the Aquatic Reserve account, I think. It's a public land. It's basically a stairway through the forest down to the beach.
Wow.
And I mention it sort of with some trepidation because I would hate to see too many people taking it, but how many people are there on Vashon, right? It's, you know, you can walk back up, and we often muse that you look up and you feel like you might be in a rainforest in Costa Rica as you look up at the big leaf maples and the fir and the cedar, and the salmonberry. It's just a lovely little hike, but bear in mind it's steep, so it's not for everyone.
Okay. I will look for that. That's amazing. Yeah. We're just surrounded by so many beautiful spots here. Do you have any pet peeves about island living?
I guess it would be gentrification and the number of people who've converted accessory dwelling units to Airbnbs.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one for sure. And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
Oh, stupid bike night, without any question.
That's a good one. I actually don't think anybody's said that that's their favorite. So I'm glad to have it represented because it's definitely a unique one for sure. And where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Well, I would certainly invite people to come to our website, NNRG, as in Northwest Natural Resource Group.org. There's a page there about the book and about all kinds of other things that we offer.
Awesome. Thank you. And we will have that in the show notes on voiceofvashon.org. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Seth. This has been a real treat.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a great honor.
And thank you for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH LP Vashon, your listener-supported island connection. Until next time, stay inspired.